What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, whoever you are, we're with you. This is a weekly podcast that comes out every Monday. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. With me is Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. And our Mareko Mamasi, our good buddy who's usually here, is on his way to Blade Show. We record on Thursdays or Fridays, and this comes up on Monday. And as we speak, he's on his way down to Atlanta. Craig, you sound good.
I'm good. Believe it or not, I'm tired. Very, very tired.
Why is that?
Do I have to tell you again? So, listeners, we've done this. This is our fourth time doing this.
This is my favorite thing now. Let's keep doing it. So you're tired. You don't say. Why are you tired, Craig?
Well, my wife has decided.
What? You're married?
Leave the country. To leave me, effectively, with the kids.
You have children? Oh, my God.
No, she's gone to London to work for a few days, so I'm left with the kids, the three of them. But it's swimming week in school, so I'm just knackered because each of them needs to take two sets of swimwear, two towels, all the bits, lunches, snacks. So it's like, that's six, you know, and it's tiring. Very tiring.
I don't know how, because you have young children. What are the ages of your children? Like, one's like six, and so they're seven, right?
The girls are six, and Buddy's three.
Oh my God. Yeah. I got a 20-year-old, so I'm like it's fantastic. Yeah. I could not imagine taking care of one child let alone three.
Yeah. It's fine. It's normally fine, but this swimming week is a killer. And Wednesdays, they have off school. They don't do Wednesdays. So, but guess what they wanted to do? They wanted to go to their swimming classes, which they normally have on a Wednesday. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? And so they're very tired, which then means I'm very tired, because when they're tired, it's difficult, you know? Yeah. But no, it's all good. I can't complain.
What do you cook for them all for, like, dinner?
You're going to laugh when I tell you what we had this evening.
Have a guess. McDonald's?
It was a bolognese, of course.
Oh.
You forget.
You know what? I don't associate, like, hot spaghetti with the summertime. So I think ultimately I never think about that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. We did have a McDonald's one night. Noodles, all that kind of stuff. You know, kid stuff.
So how are you able to, I mean, what time do they wake up early and they're just like calling for you, or are you on duty like all the time?
They're waking up about six. So then, yeah, it's get up, get them all showered, get them all, you know what it's like. You've had kids, you know, there's three of them who don't get on.
Oh, they don't?
Not at the moment. They go through phases. They're not at the moment.
Who's the boss of all the kids?
The middle one, Molly. Without a doubt. She's got the sass. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Well, you sound good.
Yeah. It's been busy. We signed a publishing deal as well, my band, this week. So there's been loads of work involved with that as well. So when the kids have been in school, I've been doing lots of admin for that. And just a lot going on, you know, a lot going on.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's been all systems go over here. We had our daughter just left. Our daughter was here for 2 weeks, and then she went back. She got an internship at her school in California, which we're obviously very sad about because she won't be spending the summer here. But it's a really good internship for her major, which is like, you know, it's the smart move.
So actually at the university, the internship.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so the school puts her up. They put her in a dorm. They put her on a meal plan, and then they pay her. And it's she gets to work alongside her professors and some of her other classmates, and so a lot of her friends are all in the same dorm. So it's like, and they don't have homework to do, so it's like party time. So they're having a good, they're having a really good time, and it's just like, you know, obviously for me, I wish she was here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like it's really important for a major. So
it's a good opportunity. Yeah,
great opportunity. And you know, we're waiting here. She applied to go abroad for a semester, and we're waiting to hear back for that. And that might be a big one. I'm not gonna, you don't even want to put a can of her on it and talk about it, but I mean that would be a, that would be a big one. But everything else is good. I'm training for the training of the New York City Marathon. So that's this is
dude, it's like this me, is like me getting ready for a diet, you know.
Well, this
you
is the sort of well there's a I have it. A I have a I followed there's a all these marathons have like a training schedule, like a, it'll give you a calendar, like it'll give you how to train for a, you know, from anywhere from a, you know, a 5K to half marathon, a marathon, and it, marathons take 20 weeks. So I followed this one guide and years ago, and it really, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to finish the, I wouldn't be able to finish it if I didn't do it. So, but I'm training to start, because so my, the 20 weeks to the marathon starts Father's Day, which is in 2 weeks. So the past 2 months, I've been running 3 days a week, doing cycling, doing all this other stuff, lots of stretching, lots of yoga, trying to figure out ways in which to recover faster. I'm 10 years older now, and I'm like not recovering as quickly as I did when I was 40. It's been like, it's been harrowing. And my wife thinks I'm having a midlife crisis, which I probably am. But I said to her, I'm like, well, it could be a lot worse. I could be like, you know, I could have some friend of mine says, yeah, you know, you could have like a Corvette and a girlfriend on the side, you know,
there's starting a band.
Yes. Start a rock and roll band. You're hilarious. You're one of the best. That is. So you're too young to have a midlife crisis.
So your wife's not running it too. It's just you this time.
Fuck no. Okay. But we are doing. So this is Thursday. On Saturday, I'm flying down to the Blade Show to spend the day at the Blade Show, and then I've been signed up for a 5K on Sunday. So I'm going to be getting home at like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, and then the next morning I'm doing a 5K with my wife. So yeah, we're in trying to age gracefully, but I'm noticing when I walk down the stairs I have new creaks coming out of my knees. Think noises that are coming out of my knees I never had before. So yeah,
check, it's not the stairs.
It's not the fucking stairs. I can like hear it and feel it. I'm just like, whoa, that is so bizarre. Yeah. That's so weird. Other than that, business has been gotten a lot better. I don't know what happened, but like we're having a lot. You know, I don't sugarcoat things. You know, a couple months, you know, like 6 weeks ago, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
And something happened, and now we're kind of getting a little bit more consistent stuff, which is really great. And we're, you know, I just want to, my job is to make sure that things are smooth. What I don't want is any problems where, you know, I don't want any kind of like problems with not only our, you know, our suppliers or anything like that, but, you know, I don't want anything that, I want to make sure that all my people are in good shape. Like the last thing I want is for there to be any, like, I don't want to go, I've been in jobs where I got, where my boss would say, oh, just don't cash your check this week. You know, it's like, I don't want that. Like I want to be on the money and we're in there. So, you know, other than that, it's good.
Are you finding sort of traditionally that Father's Day is good for business?
I don't know. You know, our newsletters are very, we're not as collectible as like someone like Neil Camamores. So when I do, I never sell out from anything. Not to mention we have a pile of stuff, but there are a lot of people, a lot of stragglers, a lot of like late people who I get a lot of mothers. I got one Mother's Day guy who calls me up the day before Mother's Day and he happens to be my town and I always deliver him something. So yeah, I think that a lot of Americans, maybe it's just Americans or maybe it's just people around me, they're very late, you know, and we're trying to write into the newsletter saying, hey, look, Father's Day is on June 15th, but we use USPS. So you got to be aware that we can't guarantee when the mail is going to come. So don't wait till last minute. And we're going to get people waiting the last minute and they're gonna be like, how come it didn't arrive? And like, well, you just fucking put it in on Saturday for a Sunday delivery. That's, you know, it's not possible. So But yeah, you know, people buy gifts for people. This is the one thing. We had a really good conversation last week with Mareko in terms of business and stuff like that. One of the things that knife makers really should start to, you know, and a lot of people who are listening to this podcast are generally, they're beginning stages, hobbyists into becoming a, you know, a business.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We, and you and I and Mareko, we've all talked about, you know, having an order list or having custom orders and taking deposits and all that stuff. I'm telling you this to the listener and to everybody. You got to have stuff in stock. You'll start to notice that when people order something online and it's shipping quickly, you're going to automatically have like customers who are going to be customers for a while. It's shocking how much nice messages I get in regards to, I'm so glad you had something that's, you know, that, you know, anything. Mm. Just have something on, in stock, something, and have a website where people can just not have to call you to say, I want this, but I want that. You can just click it, buy it, and go.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
shocking.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense.
Totally shocking. Sense.
Okay. What we got for this week?
Well, we have we have a lot. So we have questions. We have audio questions. We also have, I found an article that we could just kind of whip through, which is kind of funny. You know, we talk about art a lot. We have a funny story on art, which I think might be fun. We'll see. I'll read it to you and you decide. We have questions. We have listener feedback, and we have a game. So I have a new game that I want to start to do, and I'm not going to tell you the name of the game, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be once we get back, you know, once we get kind of more, you know, we'll have like a buzzer, and we'll, you know, you'll at any point in the time of the show, you just say, let's do the game. Anytime you start me, you know, spontaneously, we'll do the game.
Okay. Okay.
But I want to start this one. I want to read this one art story only because it has like a point in regards to what we've been talking about over the past few months in regards to AI art and art like that. But before we get to that, let me just say that this podcast is sponsored by Evenheat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To get your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. And I'm going to see Spence and Quinn and the whole Evenheat guys down at Blade Show, and I'm looking forward to seeing them. So if you got to get it hard, use an Even Heat. Do you know who Adrian Brody is?
Yeah, he's the strange looking fella, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like, yeah, he is definitely has quite a weird face. So
yeah,
he apparently he's an artist, and apparently he's well received from his gallery, but that's about it. So this article comes from Art News, and it's Adrian Brody's art is horrendous. Why are some and then the next sentence is this is the title of the story. Why are some people pretending it isn't?
They're wrong. Yeah, okay.
This is Art News. This is the number one art magazine in the world, in the United States.
Let me find the article a sec. Okay.
I put it in the show notes. I click. There's a hyperlink.
All right, okay.
So I'm going to just read it. Adrian Brody has received... So he's an actor. He's a very famous Oscar-winning actor. Adrian Brody has received due attention to his acting abilities. His Oscar-winning performance in last year's film, The Brutalist, is the kind of work most actors would be lucky to pull off in a lifetime. Last week, however, he started receiving undue attention for the hideous art he debuted in New York's Eden Gallery, which, based on press coverage anyway, is one of the most talked-about exhibitions of the summer. Brody, the artist, has now received a 1,300-word profile in the New York Times that positioned him as an artist worthy of consideration. Culture, that's an art magazine, praised him this week for instilling his art as the same head-tilting intensity as his acting. And the fawning interview came out with an introduction that read, "Scoff all you want, but there's a real market for these works," as if that's an appropriate barometer for quality. Hmm. Presumably, this was the preference, reference to the sale of a painting made by Brody for $425,000 last month. Thankfully, the reaction from the art press has been a bit different. I've already spent enough brain cells trying to dissect this work, wrote Anne Armstrong in her wet paint column for Art News. The Eden show titled Made in America is ostensibly a commentary of the painful existence of the residing nation. He uses pop icons like Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, Maggie Simpson from The Simpsons, obviously. And then there's like, if you look at it, it's very like, it's trying to be Andy Warhol.
I'm looking now. It's very sort of pop art collage-y kind of stuff, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. So they're already making points of that. One could argue that Brody's means to intentionally call to mind ripped off layers, and thematically, Brody's work isn't much better. The pictures of cartoons are about as subtle as a sledgehammer, making no attempt to add any nuance to his commentary on the American zest for carnage. So I'm going to leave it there. This article is unbelievable. They tear this motherfucker up.
Yeah.
And here's what I want to bring this back to. We talk about whether it's art or not, but we don't talk about whether it's successful or good or not. So when an art magazine is referring to this motherfucker as horrendous and why are people giving him any attention, we on Knife Talk haven't even scratched the surface of whether or not it's valuable or not.
Yeah.
And I love it because it's such a, I mean, the article's hilarious.
Yeah. In this particular case... It is valuable because somebody's actually put a value on it. Somebody's bought one of his paintings, $425,000.
Right.
Is that because of what he's done, or is it because who he is? And I think that could be related also into the knife-making world, because some makers will command a huge price and they will sell out immediately because of who they are. I'm not saying that the work isn't worthy of that, but I'm just saying they become almost... I wouldn't use the word celebrity, but they become known within the industry.
Right.
You know?
They're resting on their laurels.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't even say that.
In this situation, this art is resting on the laurels of Adrian Brody.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that you could make the point that in the knife world too, there are guys, and Mareko said in the past, and I'm not saying anything out of school, is some guys are like, you know, mailing it in.
Mm. But yeah, quite possibly.
Here's the interesting thing. Like, if you looked at this, I know three other artists who do similar stuff.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Like this. It's all very, you know, kind of gruesome, and then there's pop art stuff, and then Marilyn Monroe looks like the Joker, and, you know, there's like, it's like very, it's just, it's very derivative stuff.
Yeah. We've got lots of like high street galleries in the UK. Right. They're all like, it's just chain.
Yeah.
And they're full of stuff like this. Full of it.
Yeah. And so the hilarious part is, and this is one of the things that I bring up a lot, and we can leave it here, is the art world in general is also steered by the gallerists, because it's not necessarily, and I think that like people's tastes are also steered by specific people as well. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, a gallerist can make decision of like, we can make some money here. Adrian Brody's doing this mediocre shit, but we can talk about it in a way that, you know, is favorable, and that maybe next thing you know, we're going to get a couple buyers.
Yeah.
You know, so I found it to be hilarious, and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, even Bob Dylan's doing art now, isn't he, and selling his paintings.
He's been doing it for a while, yeah.
Paintings and sculptures and things like that. I think they've got an easier leg in the door, haven't they, I suppose, you know?
Yes.
You know, yes. They're known, not necessarily for their art in this discipline, but that sort of fame can cross over, I suppose, yeah.
Yes, sir. That's it. Sorry, I got a telephone call and I had to stop it.
So, oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So what we can do is we got questions. We have listener feedback. We can do whatever you want.
I was just saying that and I just Googled Bob Dylan art and looking on his website. The paintings are pretty shocking, but there's a picture of him with a big welding gun and he's doing some sort of sculpture as well.
He's been welding for a long time. He's been... well, if you want, we can do the first question, which we did last week, but I really wanted you to answer it.
Oh, okay.
This is from this is an audio question from our man. We just got a late entry. Dilemma, but I want to read this. So if you want, guys, if you want to listen to the podcast and you want to submit stuff, if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, that's where you can submit your questions, just like our man Fox River Blades has done. And we're gonna do this again because I want Craig's perspective.
Hey, Knife Talk, I have a question about AI. So I know you guys have talked a lot about it in regards to art, but what about other parts of business? For instance, I was able to get ChatGTP to give me a detailed upload schedule for a whole month of Instagram Reels content, the date and time to post, the type of content like cut test videos, durability test videos. I didn't decide to act on it, but I did think it could be an interesting tool to help people fill in their gaps of knowledge for stuff like marketing and accounting when they might not be able to.
Oops, sorry.
Full person to do it. So let me know what you think.
Okay, so he's looking at ChatGPT to give him sort of pointers on when to post. So it's not creating content for him. It's sort of analyzing data and telling him when he should be posting. Right.
Right. So basically, he's saying, you know, we talk about AI being, you know, a lot of. Yeah, a lot of stuff I say is usually it's bad, and he's just wondering what we think about it as a business thing in terms of like being able to crunch numbers and do things quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of makes sense. My worry with it is you never know where that data's coming from, like how reliable it is, or you know, it doesn't really give you the source, does it, of that most of the time. Maybe you can. I don't know. I don't use it really, so. But, you know, if it's telling you, you know, these are the best times to post and post about this or post about that. But where's that coming from? You know, is that just, you know, they're taking that from one guy's blog, for example? You know, who knows? But, yeah, I suppose it can, for things like structure and things like that, if it can save you time, I think that's a smart way of using AI. But, yeah, I, with regards to the sort of the reality of what it's saying, I don't know how reliable that would be.
The information we're seeing on especially on Instagram, the AI videos of people and stuff like that, it is almost indistinguishable. I am shocked when I see we did a piece in Full Blast about this company that came up with I don't know, maybe we did it here too. It was a company that created an AI model, and she was, I mean, obviously they made her breathtaking, but it was like people really thought she was real.
Yeah, well. And, my wife uses AI stuff like that for her job all the time, where she'll write a training course, but then it needs to be in, you know, 16 different languages. So they'll have, you know, they literally have a model there, and their language just changes like that into a different language. And each time it's just like, it just looks so real. It's hard to distinguish what is and what isn't.
What are some small things you're going to see with AI that's going to be slightly problematic?
I think politics hugely, you know, reporting so-and-so said X when they didn't actually say it. You know, it's always happened in, you know, newspapers and stuff. But now when we see it, a video of what is supposedly somebody saying something or doing something, you automatically believe it. And once it's out there, whether it's true or not, doesn't really make any difference these days. If it's out there, people will believe it, you know, a large percentage of people, even if it's not true, which is really worrying. And the consequences for, you know, politics is, yeah, it's pretty dire, really.
I'm worried about fraud, even petty fraud, because like I still get texts. Now, years ago, before cell phones, you could sign up to have no phone solicitors.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal in New York because it was like you're getting bombarded and you could sign up and something happened. And now all of a sudden you get texts. I get texts from scams. I got this one that says you owe $55 for your car. But it was so clearly not real. It was like, if you don't go and call this number, we're going to send someone from the DMV to, you know, take your car and you're going to owe money and then we're going to have the keys to your house. And it was just like clearly 100%. You know, fraud.
Full of shit.
You know,
question.
I mean, no question. But you know, old people fall for this stuff. My mother had given away her Social Security before she had. You know, when she gave it away a couple times.
Yeah.
And I feel as though fraud AI is going to Wild West fraud, and I think that you're going to have these very, very sophisticated, simple programs, and people are going to just lose their shirts. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about that, but I'm also worried about, obviously I'm worried about people losing their jobs, but I am worried about fraud. However, I'm very optimistic about businesses like these knife businesses where knife makers and makers of things that are able to create something that is personal, that's made by a person. I think that's going to be a unique career that I think is going to be celebrated at some point.
What do you mean?
I think the funny thing is we've been getting less and less from Amazon because we I don't know what the hell's going on with Amazon, but like one of the things that drives me crazy is, you know, if you look up something, I haven't bought anything from Amazon in a long time, and I really cut down. And I was even talking to Hillary last night saying, you know, we don't get a lot from Amazon anymore. And, you know, you look for something, you know, whatever. I was looking for like dryer parts to fix my dryer and stuff like that. And then what'll come up, it'll say preferred business.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these preferred businesses, a lot of them are these they're not real businesses. Like there was a sock company I got some running socks from a year ago. This is not a real company. It was just like, this is a preferred seller of, you know, running socks. But it isn't like a well-known seller. It's just like a shop in China creating names of companies that sound American, you know, sound English. Yeah. And it's just like, part of me is like, you get this feeling that the preferred seller is what is preference? Does it mean that this is a good person, or is this a reliable company, or is it just like they're paying to have that check mark on?
They're paying. Yes,
yeah, but most people don't realize that.
Yeah.
So I feel as though I get very concerned about how fraud really.
Yeah.
And I think that people are going to start to really like the idea of, here's a guy in his small shop and he's grinding knives and he's got the flames and he's, you know, sawdust everywhere and he's figuring this all out.
Yeah.
And I think that art, except for Adrian Brody's, and, you know, things that people are making are going to be far more valued than some of these, you know, faceless, nameless goddamn things.
Totally. I agree. There's definitely an opportunity for, stuff made by humans. Weeks ago we mentioned that, you know, I think that there will be some sort of kickback, whereas at the moment everything's quite new for people, new and shiny, and they're not realizing the consequences. But I think, like, even you mentioned you use Amazon a lot less now. We use it a lot less as well because we're aware of the consequences of that. And I think the next generation, I think they will really come to see, you know, the dangers of, just the digital world. And I think they will want to sort of get back to more, you know, handcrafted and more human things. I think that'll be a sort of, you know, it'll be punk rock to do that, I think.
I think you're right. I was talking to David today. My daughter and a lot of people in her generation are doing less and less social media.
Yeah.
And I feel as though that's a very good opportunity for there to have some reality in their lives.
Yeah. Remember
I'm
when
optimistic.
When everybody was on Facebook, but then your Aunt Sally went on Facebook, so the kids were like, well, this isn't cool anymore,
right,
you know?
Right,
and
right.
It's that kind of thing, I think.
Well, we have an emergency dilemma I think we should take care of. But before we take care of that, I want to just say one thing. I just got some Rhino-Wet today, before like an hour before. I ordered Rhino-Wet, in DOS USA Rhino-Wet. I ordered two packs of 200, 220. I ordered two packs of 400. I got it from DOS USA Rhino-Wet, and I got it at Texas Ferry Supply. You know what I put in? I put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, and I did it right. I did it. Usually I do it wrong, and I got to call somebody, and then they're just like, Jesus Christ, you old man, figure it out. But I did it right. I put in KNIFETALK10 at TexasFairySupply.com, and they peeled off 10%. So get your Rhino-Wet, get all that stuff you need from those guys over at Texas Ferry Supply. They're making awesome stuff, and they got more than just sandpaper over there. So definitely check out them, and many thanks to DOS USA. So we have an emergency, and I'm going to make the – because this is a listener of our podcast. I've seen his name before, but I don't know if he's talking about someone who's also maybe listening, so I'm going to make him anonymous. Jess came in. Dilemma, guys. I have a chef knife that I won in a raffle from a well-known maker a couple years ago. I find myself using it less and less since I've been making my own knives, and I'm thinking about selling it. I only spent $20, and I think on the raffle purchase, and the total sale from the raffle that the maker collected was $400. It's been slightly used. It's a high carbon steel, so it has some patina. So I'm thinking I would try to sell it for $200, maybe. It feels kind of weird, even though I'm asking for $200, since I only put in $20 to invest in it. Is it weird for me to try to sell another maker's knife? Alternatively, would it be weird if I contacted the maker to see if they had any repeat customers who'd be interested in this knife? Or would that be insulting? Like I said, it's a great knife. I'm just not using it anymore. Stay classy. This is a fucking good dilemma.
It's
dude.
A great one because, oh, man. Because immediately you think you shouldn't sell it. You didn't make the knife. You should. If you're a knife maker yourself, you shouldn't sell other people's knives, you know, because, you know, you're one step away from becoming somebody who buys stuff to then resell it more expensive.
Right.
But...
Use it.
There's context to everything, isn't there? Yeah. So he wanted at one point, he entered a raffle, he won it. Doesn't need it so much now. Fuck me. I would probably speak to the maker and just say, look, wow. I've got this knife. That's a bit of a kick in the teeth to the maker as well, though, isn't it?
Damn right.
Fuck.
It's bad.
Sell it. Keep it quiet. Sell it.
Yeah, you know what? This is one of those things that everybody doesn't have to know everything.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple issues you're going to have to hurdle. One is, how do you sell it without it, you know, getting back to the guy? Number two is...
Flags going up everywhere. Like,
well,
look
because
at this
that, happened, that happened to me. You know, this guy wanted, you know, I don't know what happened to him. I mean, we wanted to sell the knife I made with Carl Ruiz that he only paid $400 for. Well, he seemed to think he got the sword from Excalibur, and he tried to sell it for $2,500. And I was just like, bro. And the guy wrote on the description, everything was wrong. And I wrote to him, like, look, I'm not going to help you sell this thing, but at the very least, you have to change these things. I'm not helping you sell it because, you know, I don't want any of that heat. And it didn't sell, obviously. In this situation, here's what I would do. Don't think about the $20. You own something of value. You got it fair and square. The guy got paid. He got paid whatever he got paid.
What
I would do is I would look at the knives that he has in, you know, the price range that he normally does. And then I'd take the patina off it. I'd, you know, a little bit of Scotch-Brite here and there. I'm not going to hurt anybody. And then I put it up at a slight discount. You know, slight discount, but there's no reason you don't have to, just because you got it for $20 doesn't mean you have to sell it for $20.
No, you're not
a piece of shit for doing that. It's a thing you won. You don't use it. You know, make a little scratch. Who's going to say anything bad about that? We have this weird, look, the guy might be upset, but it's at the same time. It's like, he got his money.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I would not fucking send a message to this guy. He's not going to take it well, no matter what.
Yeah, that's true. That's
You're not
true.
Gonna take it one around because in his mind, he's gonna be like, "You got this fucking knife for $20. What are you bitching about?"
Yeah,
you know, and just like, now you want to fucking sell it for $400? You know, $200, whatever.
The move was not to write into a knife making podcast.
Hey, you know what?
The maker may be listening.
Why do you think I made him anonymous? I'm looking out for my mans. I want him to get top dollar. I want my man to get top dollar with no fritz.
Yeah.
You got to figure out a way to fucking move it. We got to help you move it. That's what we got to do. And that's the move. Now, here's a situation. We did made it anonymous. You can't reach out to my mans. We have to figure out a way to move it. So the idea I want from the listener is send us a very short, short paragraph. Short. Like, Magna Carta. How do we move it? send in your, how do we help our mans out? We're going to figure this out because, you're going to get back to him. You might get back to him. You can't put it, obviously the guy probably follows him, so you can't put it on his thing. So we have to work this out. It's like Mission Impossible here. We're like on wires hanging from the ceiling, hoping, you know, the sweat doesn't hit the floor and the buzzer goes off.
Yeah.
We're lasers again. Jesus Christ.
It's a difficult one. It really is. I mean, you've obviously got a conscience because you're asking the question, you know?
I have an idea. You could, this might be the most ethical situation, but you could donate it and get a charitable donation receipt and you could take it off your taxes. Mm. Or you could wait till you have to go to a wedding and you got to give someone a good present. Yeah. That's a nice gesture. But I think he wants that money. You wouldn't have written it in if he didn't want that money.
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
That's a good one. There's no right or wrong, but it's always wrong. Whatever you do is wrong.
I'm kind of glad Mareko's not here because he is the kind of voice of innocence. And I think that he would have a problem with this whole thing, but you and I don't have any problem with it. We got to figure it out. We got to help our man out.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Geez.
Now we got to make more money than he originally wanted. That's in my mind, I'm thinking 200. He said 400. Now I got to get 600. I want this guy to make a couple bucks.
Do you know what? Stick your maker's mark on the other side of the blade. Sell it for more.
As a collaboration. Oh, this is evil. We're now being... This is diabolical right now.
Terrible. Terrible, yeah. Terrible. Look, I want to tell everybody about Even Heat.
Everybody about Even Heat.
If you
said you got to get hard.
You already have. You're right. Yeah. Gee, I am tired, you see.
Well, that last one threw us for an ethical dilemma loop.
Yeah, that was a good one. A really good one. Yeah. And listen, if you've got questions for us, we see how many people listen to the show, and it's lots. But we generally get questions from the same people over and over again. And there's nothing wrong with that. We enjoy that. But if you've never sent us a question, but you've got a question, just send them in to us. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. We especially love audio questions. So on Instagram, you can now send audio DMs. Send them to us and we get you on the show.
That reminds me. So I'm heading out to Blade Show and I had an idea. And we can kind of spitball right now.
Yeah.
I figured out how to use voice memo and it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about asking some people at Blade Show, say your name and do you have a question? Or say your name or say something to Craig. You have something you want to tell Craig. I'm trying to figure out a way that I can do short bursts, you know, Blade Show interviews. Not interviews, but ask a question of the podcast.
Yeah.
You like that idea?
Yeah. And it's surprising how good voice memos is, that's with the audio.
Yeah,
and
I was shocked.
Madly, it like transcripts everything for you now as well, doesn't it? It writes it all out. Mad.
Well, we're about to, now that we don't have music, it's time for a game show. All right, this game is based off of a radio show I have. They have a segment called 3RQ. 3RQ is three random questions. Three random questions. And I'm going to ask you three random questions, 3RQ. All right, you ready?
Go for it.
What's the most adventurous thing you've ever done?
Bought a boat, never been on a boat before, and went sailing.
Wow. You ever sailed before?
No, not when I first bought my boat. No.
You got a sailboat? Was it a big one?
28 foot. Yeah.
Holy shit, that's huge. Yeah,
I've never been on one. And phoned up my mate to say, I've just bought a boat, let's go. And we sailed over across the channel into England from Wales. which is about, it's about 12 miles, but
that's a long way to go by
we
sail.
We later found out that it's got the highest tides in the whole of the world. So like literally the most dangerous place in the world to sail. He didn't know at the time. And I think that innocence, it was, was good at the time.
And did any of your friends know how to sail?
No, God, no.
Oh, oh God, my no, God. No, how did no. you, did you, how were you able to steer it into like the dock and all that?
We just worked it out. Yeah.
And you had no problems?
No problems at all. No.
And
no.
you, 20, so it's got like winches and shit, right?
Yeah,
you,
winches.
You,
obviously
you understand the basics of sailing? You understand
we
the basics?
We didn't have a clue.
Oh my God. This is crazy.
In fact, it was blowy as well. It was really windy. And we thought, well, this is great. This is what we need. We need lots of wind. Yeah, how we didn't die, I don't know. But I since went on to do, you know, sailing schools and all the rest of it.
Oh my.
But at the time, it was, yeah, completely fresh to me.
That's the craziest. That is totally crazy. Because when I was in summer camp, I was an awesome sailor. Those little one-person sailboats, the two-person sailboats.
Little dinghies, yeah, yeah.
To the point where you would go from the Snark to the Snapier to the Beverly. The Beverly was like a tugboat, right? And every year we had a little regatta, and I won the first year. And then I won the second year, and they put me in the shittiest boat for the third year, and I whipped everybody's ass in the third year. So I'm thinking, like, I am, like, you know, a Tor Heyerdahl. I'm gonna find the Fiji Islands, like, Contiki style. We go to St. John, my wife and I, on the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And they're renting out these little boats, and I'm thinking to myself, I know how to do this. And then I see these people whipping through the Caribbean wind, and I'm like, you cannot, I don't know what to do in these specific boats.
Yeah.
I'm gonna kill us both. I would not. So the fact that you had no idea what you're talking about, 28 feet is longer than, 28 feet is huge.
It's a fair size for a first boat, yeah, yeah. You know, it had three bedrooms. It was a pickup thing.
Did you have like a three bed? Oh my God! This is the first time you ever in a sailboat.
First time. Yes.
Jesus Christ! And you weren't scared at all?
No, I was young, dumb, foolish.
How old were you?
21, 22, maybe. Yeah.
Oh, three bed. Did you know how to do the anchor and everything? You didn't know do anything. You
didn't
figure anything.
Clue. Didn't have this. And also, this was, you know, this is before everybody had the internet in their pocket as well. So we couldn't Google what to do. We were just pulling on things and hoping.
So when you were buying this boat, did anyone say to you? So did the guy selling to you? So you ever sailed before?
No, didn't ask me anything. Didn't ask me anything.
And that is unbelievable. Might as well stop this bit right here. That is the most adventurous and scary thing that ever happened to me. I'm saying happened to me. I didn't do it on purpose. I did do some like crazy hikes and stuff. But when I was younger, when my parents got divorced, my dad took me on what I refer to as "I'm sorry, I divorced your mom" world tour.
Yeah,
and he took me to Kenya when I was 13, which is the wrong time. I was so going through all sorts of weird shit. I was not, you know, into it. And we went on this safari, and then the safari guy goes, "Hey, let's drive the Land Rover into that ravine over there." And my dad was like, "Yeah, we don't have to do that. Don't do it for us. We, you know, my dad, like I said, my dad's like a fucking Jew from the Bronx. What do we care about going on a ravine? You know, we just want to see some animals." Guy goes into the ravine, gets stuck in the river. And then he gets us to hike back to the base camp.
Oh.
So he says, just go down this path. And we're in the Masai Mara. It's like the fucking, this is the we've seen lions. We've seen rhinoceros. We've seen bulls or water buffaloes. We've seen all this stuff. So the guy says to my dad, okay, it's only like 3/4 of a mile to the camp. You just walk on this particular path and you'll be fine. You shouldn't stay here while we wait for the truck to pull the truck out. My dad and I are walking by ourselves, two fucking dudes from New York. I'm a 13-year-old. And my dad, and we're hearing, and there are lions at the camp we had. There were Masai Mara that they hired to prevent poachers and elephants and lions from attacking us. So my fucking dad from the Bronx is walking me down he's walking me, and all he says to me the whole time is, "If you get eaten by a lion, your mother's going to kill me." That's all he says the whole time. And as soon as he says that, I start to get, what do you mean, eaten by a lion? I'm 13. And he's just like, I'm like, whoa. All of a sudden, my dad, is supposed to be a protector, is saying that not only is he worried that I'm going to eat by a lion, but that he's more worried that my mom is going to be mad at him for me being attacked by a lion. I have no faith. Brilliant. I'm a dead man walking. And we're walking, and we're just like, and we don't see anybody, and the sun's starting to set, and we can just, and we're going through the mass, I mean, and the noises are coming out, and I have no faith that my dad is going to protect me if something bad happens. I'll never be like, I'm the whole time, if something happens to you, your mother's going to kill me. I'm why me? We going to throw me in front of the fucking lion?
Brilliant.
Jesus Christ. All right, that's number one. Oh, boy. Maybe should I do another one, or should I pepper them in?
I can give you more for number one if you like.
All right, let's just go number one. Let's go.
Let me think. I moved to a country where you don't speak the language. You buy a falling down house, and you just move lock, stock one day, you know? I suppose that was quite risky.
I don't know. I think the sailboat's going to be hard to beat. 30-foot sailboat just going into the ocean in the scariest part you never sailed before. I don't know what I'm thinking. I had my fucking story locked in the chamber, ready to go. Yeah. And I'm thinking, how is this going to get better than fucking like a suicide mission across the fucking ocean?
God, let's do another two quickly then. So, right. What are the other two questions?
We'll do a regular question, then head back to it.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. American Warrior Forge has messaged us. Says KTP, I just got my new PH-40 power hammer from the amazing guys at Broadbeck Ironworks. I have flat dies and rounding dies. Should I slightly round off the edges of the flat dies so they aren't so sharp? And what top tooling do you recommend I make right away? I already have a flatter and a fuller. Thanks as always, guys. And he says, P.S. I love the power hammer and I get this thing pregnant.
So a lot of times when they make dies for hammers, maybe imagine two bricks. The top die and the bottom die are two bricks. Those corners, if they're very sharp, you're gonna embed that sharpness into your material. So, if it isn't already just like slightly radiused, I would slightly radius it. I wouldn't go crazy. You really want to preserve the flatness of the dies. The fuller is really good. I have a flattening fuller that I really like. My suggestion would be before you start to really kind of get into getting all the tooling, my suggestion would be is to go to a place like the Center for Metal Arts that teaches power hammer classes, and they're going to show you how to optimize your hammer with things that you haven't noticed, because you don't need a lot of tooling when you get in the start. You know, people love to buy all sorts of tools and stuff like that, but top tools and stuff, I would go focus on the tools that you have and then figure out what you need. A fuller is great. I have a flatting, it's like a semicircle that I use, and it's really great for knife making because it's a semicircle with a bar, and then you hold it where the flat part is on the bevel and your knife is on the flat die, and then when the hammer hits, it hits the peak of the semicircle, which is, it's going to be round, so you're never going to lose your situation. It's a really great tool. I would highly suggest going into learning more about your hammer and really enjoy it before I start fooling around with too many different things. It's always better to start with what you have and then kind of grow into what you need.
Yeah. Okay. What's put on a Broadbeck tip? Do you want to do the next one too?
Yes. Jordan Fry says, hey guys, I received my first big boy grinder and it's a Broadbeck. I expect the learning curve from my previous 4x24 grinder. Do you guys have any tips? Thank you. You have any tips for learning how to use a 2x72? Big difference from a 4x24.
Yeah. Brace yourself. So when you step up to the grinder, over time you will become looser and, you know, a bit more loosey-goosey. But I think of yourself as the tool arm, if you know what I mean. You want to sort of really sort of brace, you know, brace yourself so you fart. That, you know, you want to be that clenched. because if you can keep still yourself, it'll be a big help. Yeah, I suppose that would be it for me.
My suggestion would be practice on other things rather than something good, because it is. I had that little 2x4x24, and going to a big 2x72 is a big deal, because you're dealing with more. You know, you have more grinder belt, obviously, and so it's not, you're using a lot more belt than you would with a 2x4x24, but you're able to put a lot more pressure into what you're working with. So I would just suggest. Not starting out the grinding by hand. I would start using jigs, and then really kind of focus on getting everything dialed in. And from there, I would then start to kind of dial in how you're feeling on the grinder. Yeah, I wouldn't go crazy. I think Craig's right. The most important thing is just being comfortable. I think that a lot of times people don't focus on being comfortable in what they're doing. Like the height of your grinder might be different than you think. I think that I see a lot of people with their anvils, and they're either higher than they think or they're lower than they think. And I think that you should really kind of think about how high you want your grinder. So you're the most comfortable, because you're going to be leaning over, you're going to be standing in a position, you're going to get used to standing in a position that you wouldn't normally be in, and it might be uncomfortable. I have my grinders higher up, so my platen is kind of closer to my chest height. A little bit lower than chest height. Craig's right. Get yourself in a position where you're. I think that what I tell people when we do freehand grinding is the most important thing is to have your elbows tight to your body. You don't want your elbows out and you want to be away. You want to be close and you want your elbows really tight to your body. And what that's going to do is it's going to give you some stability, almost like a tripod. That is getting comfortable and figuring out comfortable ways on which to use it without, you know, killing yourself and taking your time and really practicing on bullshit.
I often stand like a tripod. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. You. Yeah. You. That's why you got across the seven seas. Get that long rudder. I know all about it. We have an audio question.
Okay, let's do it. Yeah, from Harry Gray. Yeah,
Harry Gray. Yeah, let me just get to that real quick. And Harry Gray has sent us a message. He sent us an audio message, and here we go.
G'day, fellas. Harry Gray here. Phenomenal podcast as ever. Just wondering if you could give me some tips on how to get timber handle contours symmetrical and even on full tang and hidden tang knives. Thanks. Oh yeah. And here's to all the Aussies having a chuckle at Jeff Snakewise. Good thing they don't get Eastern Browns over there, eh? See ya.
Making fun of my snake. Hey, don't make fun of this snake, baby. This snake makes it happen. Hey, Harry, don't be chuckling. There's nothing to chuckle about over there. Don't worry about that. My situation is just fine. Don't worry about that. Okay. Australians are the best. P.S. Australians are the best. But yeah, I'll tell you why Australians are the best. I was talking about this for somebody else. It wasn't even about Australians. It was about people from outside of New York. Yeah, I get messages from people, oh, you have no idea what, you know, you don't know what it's like. You don't know what a snake is like. Come ride the subway in New York. Come to New York and ride the subway. And I want to know how clenched your asshole is because of all the things you've heard over your lifetime. And I'll be fine, but you're going to be clenched as shit. So your snakes, I'm sure, scare the hell out of me. But trust me, you get on the subway in New York and you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about.
Fuck. Different dangers.
Yeah, you know, we're used to what we're used to.
Yeah. Okay. Symmetrical sort of grind lines on handles.
Yeah.
That's a good one because that's something that I need to work on massively, my handles. And that's something that, that's my biggest problem at the moment. Getting nice sort of handles. And you look at people, you know, Mareko, he does that, you know, that reverse cowboy thing. And those lines are clean.
Wait a second.
You know Mareko does.
You know what a reverse cowboy is?
I know what it is. It's a joke. You don't. What does he call it? He calls it the...
He's a Japanese cowboy.
Japanese cowboy.
Fucking reverse cowboy. Come on, man. That's our guy. You're hilarious.
I'm just thinking of the Japanese cowboy now. What? But anyway, those lines are crisp and they're symmetrical, and it's a real sort of, that sort of faceted edge is a real sort of
I couldn't do it.
Beautiful thing to look at. Have you got any tips for that, Jeff?
Well, the only time I learned from Noah Vachon, our guy Noah Vachon, he used to do all these videos on making sure that everything was, you know, his octagon handles were square, and he was using measurements and pens and like making markers, because when you're doing that octagon handle, it's a little bit more, you know, down the barrel in regards to what you want. Yeah. Now, what I do is I probably have some sort of, you know, mental illness or fixation on not using any kind of calipers or anything like that. I will never forget, I was last blacksmith shop. We were doing blacksmithing stuff for this famous artist named is Jeff Koons. He's incredibly world renowned sculptor. Yeah. And they wanted us to do these forged eye hooks, eye bolts. And John Ledford, the master blacksmith, and guy who gets the snakes out of the shop, he was forging these incredible hooks. So I'll never forget, they came to inspect the sample, and the lead guy from Jeff Koons' shop pulls out a caliper. And John goes, "Don't you put a caliper out on me." It's like, don't you put a goddamn caliper out on me, goddamn. Don't talk to me about thous and all that stuff. And I kind of in the same way. So I kind of go by the Jimmy DiResta, if it looks straight, it's straight. Mm. I really have spent a lot of time trying to figure out when I glue the handles on. Usually when the handles are on, especially if it's G10, the sides are the same size. Like the thicknesses are the same.
Yeah.
So that helps. And then I kind of break everything down. I kind of really try to look down different angles for. I don't do any scalloping. I don't do any the facets or anything like that. I really just try to keep it very simple. And I also use my disc sander a lot, and I feel like I'm getting a lot more even removing of material from it. Mm-hmm. And that's helped me kind of keep things even. But the most important thing is if your handle scales are the same size when you're putting on the knife, you're already starting out.
You're making a good start. Yeah,
you're starting out even, because I've definitely, like, you know, my saw is at a weird angle, and next thing you know, one scale is bigger than the other, and that's just kind of the way it is. And you gotta like free ball it a little bit.
Because you know, my handles have never been, you know, intricate in any way. I'm literally breaking the corners, using slack belt and rounding off. But I think once you start going to sort of facets and things like that, you want that sort of hard edge, I suppose, on a shallow angle. Because, you know, if they're rounded off, you lose that sort of faceted edge that you're looking at. But Mareko's the man, really, I suppose, to speak to for that. Unfortunately, he's not here. But if you're going to Blade, tap him on the shoulder and ask him directly.
Well, we're talking from the past. Blade show's already happened.
True. Ask him about his reverse cowboy. You know what? He'd give you a demonstration at any point.
Don't ask him for a demonstration, please. Fucking quacko. You're a wacko. All right, so we got feedback, and we also have more 3RQ.
Okay, you get ready for the next 3RQ. I'll tell everybody about maritimeknifesupply.com. Lawrence is the man. I'm sure he would have been a Blade this weekend. They sell everything that you possibly need as a knife maker. They're a Canadian distributor for combat abrasives. They do RhinoWet, RhinoStick, all the good stuff. One-stop shop for knife makers. Steel, belts, handles, materials, tools, forges, kilns, and more. They have a deal on belts. If you buy 10, you get 10% off, all that kind of stuff. So head on over to maritimeknifesupply.com, and also give them a follow on Instagram, Maritime Knife Supply, because he often puts, you know, information on, you know, new stuff that he's getting it. And he's always got new stuff, great stuff. Go take a look, Maritime Knife Supply on Instagram too.
I'm looking forward to seeing him down at Blade Show. All right, I don't know if we're going to beat that last question, but here we go. What's the most valuable lesson you've learned from a mistake?
Ooh. You've had time to think. You give me
no,
yours.
No, I haven't really thought
about it. Oh, you
haven't.
Oh, right. Okay.
I can think about the fact that what I would say is the most valuable thing is because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you're good at other things.
Yeah.
And I learned the hard way that just because I was decent and I was selling sculpture didn't mean I was a successful sculptor commercially. And I learned how hard it was for me to be a business person. And, it was very evident. The hard work never stopped. I mean, my wife talks about the fact that she was always surprised, not surprised, but like how proud of me she was because I would, I didn't have a boss for a lot of years. And I would just manifest, the work. But I just wasn't good at the sales part or the business end. I learned from that experience of just having a hard time just being a business person to admitting my faults. And instead of saying I suck at this, I learned that maybe the smart move is to just, instead of saying I'm terrible at something, is figure out a way to make what I'm terrible at better by having someone else do it. So that's when I said to be serious about knife making, is I said, I know that I'm bad at business, so I'm going to bring someone in to be a business partner. And Tony's been my business partner for like 11 years, and it's been great. And to the point where he's breaking my balls, he's in a good mood or something like that. But he has been like, he's been giving me a hard time in a funny, funny way. So we have a very good relationship, and it's a question of not saying I'm terrible, but saying this is a weakness. How can I fix this weakness? And then instead of just like feeling bad about yourself, figuring out a way that you can fix it. So maybe someone else got to fix it. But that's been the most valuable thing is you don't have to be good at everything. You just have to acknowledge when you're not good at something and then address it in the most positive way possible.
Yeah, that's the skill, is knowing when you aren't great at it and getting somebody else into help.
It's very
real skill. Yeah.
Once you start to not feel bad about yourself, and you're just like, hey, it's okay that I don't know how to do this, but that guy does, and I'm going to pay him to fix it. It's very liberating. Like that was one of the most liberating things in my life, is saying I don't have to know everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Good one. Yeah. I would say holding grudges against people for way too long, where that's just wasted energy. And when you look back later, years and years later, you just think, what a waste that was,
Yeah.
And, sometimes it can sort of drive you to want to, to do something better or whatever it may be. And, use that energy for that, I suppose. But then, just hating somebody years and years later, I'm well over that now, I used to have a little list of people, It's like,
oh, really?
One day you're going to get it back kind of
really?
Thing. And then I just let it go. And it's just like, oh, actually, everything just feels better, let go of any sort of grudges, I think, is good for anyone's sort of mental health, I think.
Yeah. Who Dave Portnoy is?
No.
He owns this media company called Barstool Sports. You probably have seen
I've heard
his
of them,
video.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he does like the One Bite Pizza review and all that stuff. Mm. He's become quite a media mogul. And what he has got an enemies list. And what he does is he has the name of his enemy engraved on a bottle of champagne. And then when they fall from grace or get fired from their job or all of a sudden he deems that he has won, he busts out that bottle and he drinks it. He drinks the bottle and he just talks about what a piece of shit that person is. It's totally the opposite of what you do.
It is completely.
Completely the opposite.
But I certainly used to have the list. Yeah, yeah. But letting go of things like that, I think, is only good for you,
Resentment is so hard, and it's so hard, especially in the knife game, because there are these moments of, like, there are these moments that are really, like, what's it worth? Like, here's an example, and this is an example I'm slightly embarrassed about, especially considering the time. Steve Pellegrino is our friend, and... Yeah. He passed away in February, And I definitely, he and I had a couple of instances where there was just, you know, I was slightly, I even made a joke on this podcast saying, all of a sudden everyone's making offset serrateds. And he was, you know, he sent me a message saying, I'm sorry, I'm not going to make them anymore. I felt badly about that, that I wasn't pointing at him, but, you know, we worked it out. We worked it out. And I always felt very badly that I made him feel like I was resentful towards him, which I wasn't. And now, especially now that he's gone, I have a lot of, you know, feelings of regret. I'm glad that we worked it out. Like, we worked it out. It wasn't even working it out. It was just a text. And, like, I was, you know, I'd probably send him an emoji or a laughy face or something like that.
Yeah.
But I am definitely glad that we were able to have no problems, especially considering he passed away. And I don't want to feel the need of having any kind of resentment or regret, you know, over something stupid, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. And, yeah, holding on to any sort of bad feeling. Like I said, it's no good for anyone. Either side, either party.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Well, okay. We got whatever you want. We got more 3RQ or we have listener feedback.
Let's do some listener feedback. But first, I need to tell everybody all about dharmasteel.se. I'm sure you all know about dharmasteel by now, because if you're using, you know, if you're using any sort of pattern welded stainless at all, you should be using dharmasteel, really. Let's face it. Yeah, the best stuff out there. And obviously, we do the Chef Invitational every year. I'm just on their website now, dharmasteel.se, and they've got a DCI tab across the top there, and it takes you down. It tells you all about this year's show. It tells you about, you know, who's in show. You've got the dharmasteel build along as well, where, you know, if you haven't got your steel yet, I don't know whether Lawrence still has any left. I don't know, but head on over to Maritime Knife Supply. See if he has. Join in with us. And on the 15th of November, we will be having our DCI Awards, which are always great. And I'm just looking at the categories here. So there'll be votes for the best chef knife, best Japanese knife, best bread knife. There's also a best in show voted by the attendees. There's obviously the best build-along knife as well. It's always, always a good show. And I'm just looking at the makers for this year. Alex Pohl is in this year. Alex Pohl Ironworks, obviously. Wow. Fingal, Josh Prince, Newham Knives. I mean, there's the list there of makers is, yeah, it's amazing. So go take a look at this kind of stuff that they're making with dharmasteel, and hopefully that will inspire you to make some yourself. Head on over to dharmasteel.se, use Knife Talk at checkout and get 10% off.
So, listener feedback. If you want to send us some listener feedback, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and you can send us your messages. Last week, I kind of made a whole thing about, you know, sending stuff in for my race, and I don't know if you heard it, but it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Because Instagram and everything is kind of international, there is some language. There's some language. You know, people miss different things. And I've just gone for a run, and I've said, I wrote in the thing, support my race. Right. So you'd automatically think see a guy running.
Yes.
And that he's huffing and puffing. You'd think support my race is meant to be for charity.
Yeah.
But not some sort of, as Mareko mentioned, not about your heritage. Lockhart Knife Works wrote, since you've helped me out so many times, I clicked the link and I helped you as requested Monday night, and I walked into my AA meeting. A guy I had never met asked me, do you know Mark S? He's in a hospital with complications to Parkinson's, and I'm recording video messages so the guys can take it to him. What are the odds? Something is telling me I did the right thing. You inspire me on a lot of things, but you won't catch me running on a marathon. LOL. So that's really cool. Yeah. And don't worry, Lockhart. I've already signed you up. You're going to be joining me on the marathon. So you got to raise $5,000. Good luck. All right. Next is Josh Prince. We were talking about the snakes in the shop. Yeah. And I posed the question of, do you have any animals living in your shop? And Josh Prince has got a zoo in his shop. Animals in my shop. I have birds that come in and take the kale wool for nesting. Apparently a neighborhood cat comes in at night and pees in the vermiculite bin. When I put something in it for a meal, you could not believe the smell. There are some resident mice as well that I catch scrambling up the upper level of my shed. Very distracting. I get some skunks, groundhogs, and a regular visit from chipmunks.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's like watership down over there.
Well, where is he?
Rhode Island. He's in Rhode Island.
Oh, Rhode Island. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Do you get any weird animals in your? Oh, you got all sorts of shit.
I don't know what it is. There's something. I think it's a pine marten that's in my barn. I haven't seen it, but I've seen the holes that it's dug. Yeah.
Is that like a weasel?
Yeah, like a weasel, basically. Yeah.
Ferret.
Yeah.
It's a much nicer name than a weasel.
Yeah.
It's a pine marten.
Even
when you say it, you say it with such class. I'm saying, you mean a weasel?
A fucking weasel. And I often leave my shop, but I've got like huge barn doors. And on a hot day, I'll often open them all up anyway. And because, you know, there's no one around here, I often leave them open overnight and things like that. So we've had owls in there nesting as well, and it's not too, mice and rats, that those are the kind of things that I can't stand, but thankfully we haven't had any issues. But yeah, mice and rats, they're my thing. Amy's snakes, I'm okay with snakes, but mice and rats.
Ben Snoor gets the worst. I mean, Ben Snoor lives on a ranch in Texas. He was walking and this rattlesnake, which is deadly, he accidentally stepped on one. He didn't even see it. He got a gun on him. He shoots him because it's just like you can't let them. I mean, he used to say that when his kids were very young, there'd be rattlesnakes in the sand, in the sandbox.
Jeez.
And it's like you're living around these and it's funny. And I'm talking to my wife about it. She's like, well, what do you do? I'm like, oh, you know what? He does. He just, you know, he takes care of it. He just blasts them, you know, but
shooting a snake.
I mean, it's like they'll kill you.
Yeah.
You get bit by a rattlesnake where he is. It's not like he's near of a hospital.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He's done. He's going to be, you know, he's going to swell up his ding dong and he's done. But I mean, you know, once again, I'm sure he'd be terrified to ride the subway. So it's all the same thing.
There we go.
Paul Jansen, Gold Star listener, says, do you know what an HOA is? Homeowners Association.
No.
So there are these communities housing places, like, you know, you'll see houses that all look the same. And then they'll have a community, they'll have a housing, a homeowners association, basically telling you what you can and can't do in your area. So they don't want you to have certain things in your, you know, front yard.
Okay.
They want everything to look the same. And it's like a block association almost. Yeah. So we were just talking about how I'm sure that I want to send in your HOA stories because I'm sure that a lot of people live with an HOA and I'm sure forging is not good. So Paul Jansen, Gold Star listener, says, not a HOA, but here's still a funny story. I live right across the road from a church that my aunt attends. She asked me if I do any forging. She was asked if I do any forging, more specifically, on a specific evening. I said, yeah, and I was. And I asked how she knew, and it turns out my hammering was disrupting an important meeting at the church they were having that night. So
good. Good.
But so send in your HOA stories. I want to hear the homeowners association get mad at you for grinding, you know, sparks all night long.
Oh, I can imagine the Facebook groups now. Yeah.
Oh, dude, the Facebook groups in my town are ridiculous.
I love that local Facebook groups are just the best.
I had Jared Thatcher on Full Blast, and he was just talking about Facebook groups and stuff like that. The local Facebook groups are crazy in my area, and the craziest part is like there's one specifically for food. It's called something foodie.
Yeah.
And people will write saying, I'm looking for a good hamburger. Where should I go?
Yeah.
And then they'll start sending, you know, listing off the restaurants. And then one of them will be like, you know, this particular restaurant. And one person will write, I hate that restaurant. I've had the worst service
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It's, you know, the restaurant didn't do anything. But now they're just like, yeah, the owner sucks and the food is terrible and the chef's an asshole and the waiters are terrible. And it's just like this poor son of a bitch just got fucking beaten down by the local community for no reason. Where do you get a hamburger? I hate this restaurant. It's like crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Yeah, all the local ones here.
Yeah. That's why I steer clear. I don't write anything. I only use social media for business and maybe so my aunts and, you know, my remaining relatives can see what my family's up to. So Justin Stinson, our man, Justin Stinson says, hey guys, I'm currently catching up on episodes. The shop's been busy. acetone is not a cancer concern. We were talking about acetone being a cancer concern. Your body actually makes it in your liver when you fast. It's the reason people have bad breath during ketosis. Your body gets rid of it through the lungs. It's not, it's a ketone. Now, I don't know this for a fact, but, you know.
I think the issue is with acetone, using it on plastics or things like that, it's like the... It can almost sort of melt it a bit sometimes, kind of it off gas.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue.
I don't think it also, itself. I think your skin absorbs it too a little bit. So I'm not 100% sure it's good for you in general. And he goes, also, name your price to be a Gold Star listener. I'm game and I've been participating since the beginning. I salute you guys and how much I've learned and laughed. And I'm going to tell you something. Justin Simpson, Running Man Forge, we hereby declare you Gold Star listener. He has been with us from the beginning. Congratulations. You are now Gold Star listener, Justin Simpson. This will provide you with no discounts whatsoever, and you will get nothing other than your appreciation.
We should get some sort of like Dharma Steel sort of sheriff badges made. For people, you know, and they can proudly wear them at Blade Show. Yeah.
Shall we send them abroad? May I just tell a story while we're here?
Yes, yeah.
And I told you this YouTuber bought one of my knives in the guys in Canada. And what we do international shipping, I hate international shipping only because, here's why I hate it. If we could ship things easily abroad, we would have a different business. I mean, our business would be like, I can only say like 5 to 10 times what it is.
Yeah.
It's such a fucking pain in the ass because it's number one, it's expensive and it takes a long time. Like to ship to England or UK, let's say UK, it's probably going, it most likely is going to, for a knife, it's probably about $50 or $60, and that's the base price. Probably about 65, 80, 70 bucks.
And probably using multiple carriers. So you
multiple
lose traffic
carriers.
At some point. Yeah.
And you won't know how long it's going to take. So why would somebody pay $60 if it takes fucking, 2 months? You know, it's just like, it's not that number one. And then you got to pay for shipping and your customs. So I sent this knife, this YouTuber bought this knife, great guy. And he did a really nice video and he talked about how much he paid. It was a $400 knife, $399. That's what we charged. And then we charged shipping. We charged, because it was international, we charged a little bit higher. And then what we'll do is, because I don't know exactly what it's going to be, we go to the post office and then whatever the balance is, we'll refund the money.
Yeah.
Guy writes, I paid $700 for the knife and everything else. So I sent him a message, and he explained that it was the customs and the duties and the shipping. And we only charged him $450. $445. Motherfucker paid $700. He said the Canadian government charged him $229. Mm-hmm. So the 58% tariff. That's crazy. That's crazy. That is crazy. They don't want us to do any business.
Are you seeing tariffs when you're buying stuff into the States now from outside of the States?
I don't buy anything. I don't notice any price differences. All the stuff I buy for the company is all made in America that I know of. I haven't even noticed anything in regards to the price of steel because I've been buying a lot of steel lately in small batches and then really looking at the pricing, and they haven't changed the prices. There could be a lot of reasons for that. It could be made in the United States. I'm not 100% sure. You can't charge tariffs for stuff that's already in the country before the tariffs come up. And I don't know how the tariffs work, but Canada fucking took this dude. He paid $400 for the knife and the government charged him $229 in tariffs.
Over 50%.
It's like 58%. They took them, dude. So in regards to your Dharma Steel badges for Gold Star listeners, Jesus Christ, we're going to need a second mortgage to get them in the mail.
Yeah.
I swear to God, it's a huge problem with the customs and all that stuff, because if it was easy, we would have all these small businesses would have such a robust business.
Yeah, completely. Completely. Yeah.
All right.
People would have more choice. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we need to do another 3RQ.
Go on then. Do one more, then we'll head out. Go.
Do you like the 3RQ?
I love it.
All right. So should we keep doing 3RQ? All right. Okay, good. 3RQ. All right. 3RQ. Let me look at this list. We already did that one. If you could have dinner with any person living or dead, who would it be? That's easy. I mean, you're not gonna have an exciting answer. Not like fucking buying a giant boat fucking floating across the water.
Living or dead. Hitler.
Whoa. Wow. What a weird fucking... What? What do you think he's going to be entertaining?
No, I'd like to try and understand that sort of...
You think you're going to be able to talk him out of Holocaust?
No, I don't think I'd be able to, but I would like to try and understand that sort of hatred and where it all comes from, you know?
That is a crazy person to want to have dinner with. You actually have to eat, you know. It's not that you're just like listening. Can you imagine? Yeah. You're sitting at dinner. You've ordered dinner. And next thing you know, this fucking wacko with a crazy haircut and a Charlie Chaplin mustache sits down. And all of a sudden, you're supposed to eat?
Yeah.
Nah, I don't want that.
Maybe not. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
First answer counts.
You got him. Yeah. I mean, you picked Hitler. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, talk about exciting. It's not hard for me to figure this out. I would want to sit down with my dad and just kind of like that. We'd have to have a conversation about how things ended. And I need, there's some answers that I'll never get from him that I got to live with, you know, like there were some things that were said and things that were done that could use some explaining for me to have some closure. Yeah. I'll never get them. It's just fine. I would also like him to see how I did with my daughter. And then I would also like him to know that I started a business and one of my big things he was a really great painter. He taught me a lot about painting. Mm. I would have loved to shown him pictures of the knives and then have some suggestions from him and say, hey, you know, we could do this and do that and do that thing. I would have loved to have that opportunity, but I think that it would be my dad.
I feel bad saying Hitler now.
You should not feel bad about Hitler. That was worth it just for that last joke. That was fucking awesome.
Don't feel
bad about that. Don't feel bad about that. And that is not the title, ladies and germs. Trust me.
We've got a much better title.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Don't feel bad about Hitler. Jesus Christ. Support my race. You know what I'm saying? It was back to that again. Oh my God! Guys,
let's call it a day.
Before we get out of here, I want to tell you I'm going to go see my guys at Tormek. Tormek._sharpening on Instagram, Tormek.com. If you're looking to get into knife making, or if you're learning to sharpen knives, you want to get your knives sharper, get use a Tormek. I'm telling you, I'm going to see my guys down there. The customer service is excellent. The tutorials are really good. It's a great company, great service. Tormek all day. Tormek.com.
There you go. We shall speak to you all again next week after Blade Show. I won't say have a great show because you'd be back by now. But have a good one, everyone. Bye for now.